Nursing both at once was harder now that they were bigger, but she was used to it. She leaned back against the tree and let her mind drift. One way or another, in less than 7 days, she would be somewhere else. Maybe dead. She wasn't going to be taken alive, not again. But maybe somewhere. She couldn't picture it quite. Her mind threw up pictures from her past life. Hills, valleys, forests, fields, island beaches, rocky ledges. The shuttle field on Rotterdam. Then the shuttle rumbling down the runway, taking off, the sky darkening, darkening, the stars. She shook her head abruptly. The twins had taken most of her milk. It was time to try out her brew. She added a little honey to make it sweeter and dribbled it into their mouths as they sucked. Redhead made a face before going on, but the dark-haired one didn't pause in his rhythm. She had no idea how much to use. Not as much today. She didn't want anyone to notice and worry about them.
Do babies go to sleep with a spoonful or a cup?
Their sucking slowed, finally.
They gain a kilo whenever they fall asleep.
Carefully, Brunn laid them on the little quilts. She levered herself up and stood, fastening her dress and then stretching. She found the knife she had hidden, tied a length of yarn around it, and hung it around her neck, then took the cloth strips she'd made and bound them tight around her breasts. When it was time to go, really time, she would bind her breasts before she fastened her dress. But this was only practice. With a last glance back to make sure she could not be seen through the thick leaves, she walked over to the wall again, steeling herself. She looked back at the babies, still sleeping. When she turned again to the wall, a man was looking over it. Brunn stood frozen, immobilized with shock. The man stared at her.
Brunn?
Brunn's heart lurched, then pounded. Someone who knew her name, who used her name. It must be a rescue. She nodded, giddy with relief.
Can you climb over?
She nodded again, and a wad of brown cloth flew toward her. She dropped back, furious.
Put that on. Cover your dress and your hair. Then wait for me to call. I'm watching for ground cars. Don't bring the babies. They'll be cared for.
The babies? I only gave them a few drops each. Will they sleep long enough?
Brunn yanked her long skirt up around her waist and ran to them, fumbled at the jug, and poured more of the honeyed brew onto her hand.
Will they suck? Can they swallow?
Their mouths caught at her finger, sucking, and she dribbled more brew into each mouth. Then she dragged the garment on, a hooded cloak-like thing too warm for the day, and ran back to the wall. Even in those few moments, she was aware how good it felt to have her legs free, not bound by the narrow skirt. While she waited, she thought how to make him understand that they had to find Hazel and the little girls. She could not go without them. If she could not save her babies from this world's horrors, she must save them.
Now.
She stood up. The wall was not as tall as she was, and she made it easily. It was wide enough to lie on. She rolled the cloak around her and then dropped off to be steadied by his waiting arm.
Are the babies inside? When will they cry?
How am I supposed to answer that?
Brunn mimed drinking, then sleeping, and he took her arm.
Come along. We have to get to the car. Look down.
Fuming, Brunn looked down at the rough pavement and went where he directed. She didn't want to argue with him in the street where anyone might see, but she had to convince him about Hazel. He stopped beside a ground car parked in a row. He opened the driver's door, and then the back doors popped open.
Get in.
She looked him full in the face and mouthed, Hazel.
Look down. Get in before someone notices.
She slipped into the back seat and leaned forward, waiting for him. As soon as he closed his own door, she tapped his shoulder. He glanced back.
Hazel.
I can't understand you. What's wrong?
Damn the idiot fool. How did Lady Cecilia keep from bursting?
There on the seat beside him were a map and notebook with a pen. She reached over and snatched at it, wrote, Get Hazel, in large letters, and then Ranger Bowie House. He read, then paled.
We can't do that. No one can get in there. Damn it, woman, you want off this planet or not?
She tapped, Get Hazel, again, glaring into his face, trying to give him a mind-to-mind transfusion of her determination.
Who the hell is Hazel, anyway?
She wrote again. Girl on ship. Get her away, too.
Can't do it. Now you sit back, and I'll take you where it's arranged.
The barrier between them started to rise. Brunn lunged forward, putting her weight on it.
Get back, you fool!
The barrier slid back the small distance it had risen. She paid no attention, wriggling over the barrier into the front passenger seat. Up here, the windows weren't frosted. The man jerked the ground car out of its parking space and accelerated.
Gods, woman, if they see you up here...
She held the paper out. Get Hazel.
I can't, I tell you. Ever since Mitch Pardew got elected Ranger Bowie, he's been angling for the captaincy. I can't barge in there and get some fool girl. I got you. That's what I contracted to do.
Brun glanced at the ground car controls, at his movements as he turned, slowed, sped up again, made another turn.
Simple enough.
After the next turn, she grabbed the wheel and yanked it hard. He yanked back and stared at her long enough to almost hit another ground car.
Damn it! Woman, it's no wonder they muted you. Heaven knows what you'd say if you could talk.
She scribbled rapidly on the notebook. Get Hazel. It's market day. She goes out. Market near Ranger Bowie House. She pushed that in front of his face. The ground car swerved again. She lowered it slightly so he could read and see over it.
Can't do it. Too dangerous. I have it all planned out. Gah!
Brun poked a finger into his ear, hard, and laid the pruning knife on his thigh, pointed where he could not ignore it. The ground car swerved wildly, then he got it back on his side of the street.
You are completely insane! All right, we'll drive past Ranger Bowie House and the damn market, but you gotta get in the back. If anyone sees...
He glanced at her, and she bared her teeth.
All right, I said, I'll do it. We'll go past, but you're gonna get us killed.
With some care, Brun reversed herself into the back seat, making sure that she had enough weight on the barrier to prevent its coming back up if the controls weren't actually broken. She laid the knife at the back of his neck. It would do no good there, unless it was strong enough to slide between the vertebrae, but she judged it too obvious to hold it to his throat.
They told me you were wild, but they didn't tell me you were crazy.
Brun grinned. They hadn't known what had been done to her, or they'd have known how crazy she was.
That's Ranger Bowie's house.
Brun stared, uncertain. It was one of five huge houses arranged around the sides of a plaza. In the center was a huge five-pointed star outlined in flowers and grass. Pretty, really, if you weren't trying to escape the place.
Ranger Houston, Ranger Crockett, Ranger Travis, and Ranger Lamar. Ranger Travis is captain right now. The nearest market to Ranger Bowie's house is down this street. The women's service door is right down there, see?
Brun saw a shadowed gap in the long stucco wall. As they drove past, she could see the door set back from the sidewalk and the little alcove for the gate guard. They went past one cross street, then another. Ahead, down this street, a rope blocked off traffic beyond the next cross street.
That's the market. Ground cars can't go there, nor you. Now you've seen there's nothing we can do, we can...
Brun pressed the tip of the knife just below his ear. With her other hand, she scrabbled for the pen and notebooks and printed, "Go around. Keep looking." On the third circuit, Brun spotted a woman walking toward Ranger Bowie House, baskets in each hand, still some blocks from it. Something about the quick, short shuffle caught her eye. She tapped the driver's shoulder.
That her?
He eased the car closer. It was hard to tell. The dark head bent forward, the slim body gliding along with those short, quick steps enforced by her dress. But as the car slid past, Brun caught a glimpse of the serious face, that tucked-in lower lip. She tapped the man's arm again, hard.
I'm gonna regret this.
But he pulled the car to the curb and got out.
You, girly.
Hazel stopped, eyes on the ground.
You from Ranger Bowie House?
She nodded.
I got business there. Get him back.
He popped the rear doors. Brun could feel Hazel's confusion, her uncertainty, her near panic.
Hurry up now. I don't want to have to tell Mitch you're lazy.
She ducked into the car then, eyes still down. Then she saw Brun, and her eyes widened. Brun grinned. The driver got back in and tried to raise the shield.
Sit low.
Brun? What? Where?
Brun mouthed escape, but Hazel shook her head. So Brun made a rocket of one hand and jerked it upward. Hazel stared, then grinned, almost bouncing on the seat in excitement.
Really? I was trying to figure a way. I'd found out where you were and all, and I told Simplicity as much as I could without getting in trouble, hoping she'd see you.
Brun nodded. She mimed the ground car, taking them to the rocket. She didn't know if that was the plan. She still didn't know what the plan was, but surely that was the gist of it. Then she showed Hazel the notebook and wrote, "Little girls."
"We can't take them."
Brunn tapped the notebook.
"No, we can't. I already decided that months ago. They're happy, they're safe, and they wouldn't make it anyway."
Brunn stared at Hazel, but Hazel's expression didn't waver.
"We have to. Leastways, at least we have to try. You, for sure. And your babies?"
Brunn shrugged and wrote, "Can't take them. Too risky. Too little."
"See? Same with Brandy and Stassi. We can't do it."
"Glad one of you's got sense. All right now, we got us a little problem. I plan to pass Brunn off as a man. Brought along men's clothes for her. They're under the seat there. But I don't know what to do about Hazel."
Brunn mimed a purchase to Hazel and nodded to the driver.
"Tell him."
Hazel looked scared, her mouth pinched tight.
"Brunn says buy some."
"Buy some? Buy some," she says. "And just how am I supposed to stop and buy some?"
But he pulled over a few streets further on and made his way to a sidewalk vendor. Brunn, peeking over the barrier, saw him choose blue pants, a brown shirt, and high-topped boots like most of the men wore, and a hat. He was back in just a few minutes, and when he started the car again, he threw the clothes over the barrier.
"You change now, both of you. Put your dresses under the seat. I'll get rid of them later. You'll have to cut your hair, but not here. Can't leave hair in the car. I've got knives for both of you."
The Serrano Legacy, Rules of Engagement, is continued on the next CD.